What's up, all you filthy puppet buttholes out there? You're listening to Deadite Bites, the No Ship Network Ash vs. Evil Dead podcast. Tonight we are covering Season 2, Episode 8, entitled Ashy Slashy. This is a No Ship Network podcast. I'm your host, Steve.
I am your host, Paul.
And where's Em?
And I am your host, Em.
Paul is not going to be with us tonight. He is suffering from a cold. Or at least that's the story that we heard. I heard a slightly different story that he turned into a deadite and we had to kill him.
So you heard that, but we were participating in the thing you heard?
I'm trying to maintain a legal distance from the issue.
I see.
Allegedly, he turned into a deadite, and allegedly we had to decapitate him in a very bloody, gory fashion.
See, what really happened is he got tired of us having our nubs up his puppet pooper, so he made like a tree and banged us.
I like that version better. I think we're going to go with that. We got banged by Paul. And it was fine and filthy.
Filthy all right. And fine.
All right. So,
sweet cheeks.
I'm sure you guys are all wishing Paul a speedy recovery. He did this for the sake of, obviously, for the sake of the podcast. When you sound like crap, you don't want to be on microphone. And when you just don't feel good, you're not into it. Everybody's been sick. So, this was done for your listening pleasure.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/noship. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And my recommendation today is actually going to be one that I've listened to that's one of my favorites, and it's I, Claudius by Robert Graves, narrated by Nelson Runger. I really enjoyed listening to that, and I know it has nothing to do with Ash vs. Evil Dead, but if you're Spartacus fans, you might be curious just about Roman history, and Spartacus was made by Raimi Tappert, so maybe you'll be interested in that as well. I enjoyed it, and I recommend it. All right.
Okay, so let's jump right into first impressions of this episode. Like I said, this is Season 2, Episode 8, Ashy Slashy M, go!
I love this episode. It's, again, this episode, including the two before it, were amazing. It's almost like we've, like, downshifted a couple of times and it has gotten darker and darker.
Yes.
And darker as yes. We've gone on, because it started out, and I know there were some complaints out there in the fandom watching that it was maybe a little bit too comedic, too tongue-in-cheek earlier on, not as much horror, but it's definitely turned the corner on that.
Mm-hmm.
Not to my dissatisfaction. So I do enjoy it. I was really upset to see what happened with Pablo at the end, obviously, but I don't believe it. So that makes it easier.
Am not believing the hype. We got a few pieces of feedback that we will bring out at the end of the episode like we usually do, and some of our listeners have a different opinion on that. They think it's for real, and they're not too happy about it. I personally don't believe that Pablo is dead. We'll talk more about that when we get there. As far as what I thought about the episode in general, another great, great, great episode, and then just the completely unexpected punch to the dick right at the end of it. It's, man... I did not see that coming, and I mean, I saw a ball cut him and everything, but I did not think that was going to happen, and then he just slides in too, and I'm like, fuck.
Yeah. I mean, I knew there was a reason for them to show you ball cutting, but I didn't imagine it would amount to that necessarily.
I mean, you could have thought at the time that it was happening that you were creating a situation where the book could actually exit Pablo now that it's done its job.
Right.
And then the last two episodes could be about something different that could set up the theme for season 3, which yeah. is going to happen, which is another reason why I think that Pablo is not gone. And Ray Santiago did not hit the gym just for this one or two scenes in the last couple episodes where he's all buff. And I know you noticed it. He's buff.
He is buff.
Not you. I'm talking about everybody. Everybody noticed it. You know?
Yeah.
So anyway, all right, but okay, so let's bring out the Metal Mike quote of the week, and yours is?
Mine's not necessarily that funny, but we hardly ever quote Pablo.
True.
In fact, I can't even remember any quotes that we've given to Pablo, not a one. Maybe they're there. I just can't recall them. So I'm gonna quote Pablo, and he says, "Come on guys, let's go save the world. Can I get a Ghost Beaters?" And it was so lame. Nobody gave him a Ghost Beaters.
I know. It sucked. It's just like, come on. This guy's carrying it at this point. So my Metal Mike quote of the week goes to Kelly when she's fighting the Ashy Slashy puppet. And she says, after he asks, "What have we learned this week?" Like he's on some sort of children's television special. And she says, "Always bring a gun to a puppet fight." brilliant.
Yeah,
brilliant,
Kelly,
brilliant.
Kelly was awesome this episode.
As she is every episode. And, you know, there was a great amount of quotes from everybody to pick from. Even Pablo had a couple. I almost was tempted to go with, "Bring him to me, Jefe." Because it just, not because it's such a greatly worded or humorous thing to say per se, but just the way he said it with that confidence and power. And you want to see Pablo like that, and it jazzes you up. But
and this is after he's already learned that it could kill him and everything, and he's still saying it like that.
Mm-hmm. He's committed. Mm-hmm. He's committed. All right. So Ashy Slashy was directed by Tony Tills, written by Susan Keeley and Aaron Lamb, and produced by the Three Stooges, Raimi, Tappert, and Campbell. All right, so getting right into the recap, we have Kelly, Pablo, and Ruby grabbing their weapons from the trunk of the Delta, just like Ash saw them do at the end of the previous episode. And Kelly remarks that if they find Ash, no one can tell them that it was because of his stupid pet tracker that they found him here.
So do they think that he still had the pet tracker on him?
Yeah.
So they were following him. Okay. But he actually has at some point managed to get it inside Ball.
Privy to that. But this show kind of runs a little bit roughshod over logical connections between episodes. The Delta is working at this point. And from what we see from the preview, it's working in the next episode too.
Yeah.
I've had an old Oldsmobile before, and getting it fixed is a long, arduous process that costs a lot of money. So I don't know who had the time to do this or who had the funds to bankroll it, but the Delta's driving, and so there's that. And
especially since he stabbed his chainsaw like to the hilt through the end of the engine.
I mean, they would have, even being in Michigan, you would probably have to order these parts from some other part of Michigan, you know, if they're even still made in the United States anymore. Anyway, but so Pablo says, "Come on, guys, let's go save the world. Can I get a Ghost Beaters?" And everybody, like Em said, everybody just kind of leaves him dejected. They're just like, "All right, let's be serious about this. Let's go in and get it done." Poor Pablo. So the trio enters the abandoned asylum, and Pablo sees something in one of the rooms that kind of grabs his attention. And then Pablo and Kelly end up having a conversation about the Necronomicon and, you know, how it doesn't let anybody off easy. So right away, you start to see that this episode is full of foreshadowing of what happens at the end with Pablo. It's referenced at least two or three different times. And, you know, he says that El Jefe has been telling them since the very beginning that anybody who is surrounded by the book, other than, you know, Ash himself,
right,
ends up dead at some point. So this is when she says, "Hey, come on, snap out of it. Where's my powerful vagina?" And this is there's two Star Wars references, two direct Star Wars references in this episode. And this is one, the first one. And he says, "I've got a really bad feeling about this." And, you know, Kelly, of course, is just like, "I've had a bad feeling about everything that we've done since we met, Ash. What the fuck are you talking about?"
Because the time he's quoted Star Wars before, she's like, "Did you just Yoda quote me?"
Yeah, last season.
Yeah.
That was special. I love that.
See, I mean, she's also kind of a Han Solo, too.
She is. She is. She really is like the Han Solo of the group. I mean, the dress, the attitude, the way she's able to just sling that gun and pop caps and people right in the head. You know, no hesitation. Zero hesitation. The true Han Solo from the original movies who shot first. God damn it. Okay, so the part that I really liked about this scene, being a Floridian, is that, you know, they're going back and forth and they're like, "Hey, Pablo, this is going to be a piece of cake. Let's go in here. Let's get Ash. Let's let you kill the goth demon, send him back to this other dimension, and then we'll get out." And then Pablo's, of course, like, "Yeah, and we'll go back to Jacksonville." And she goes, "Maybe not Jacksonville." Anybody who lives in Florida understands that. Any residents of Jacksonville, feel free to write in and defend that. But we'll see if that actually happens. I think people in Jacksonville are probably going, yeah. So Ruby comes up and throws some cold water on their tender moment and, you know, "Focus up, kiddos. Let's go. Let's get this done." So it turns out Ball has convinced Emery to bring Linda and Lacey to the asylum so they can be part of Ball's plan to convince Ash that Ball's version of reality is the real one. And for this act, they will get protection. And this is why the Linda at the end of the last episode was actually real, because when Ash tried to blink her away and say, "You're just in my imagination," she appeared to be real. And that's when the pieces clicked for him. And he's like, "This motherfucker has me in an actual physical location and he's fucking with me." He went to the window. He saw his buddies come up in the Delta and he was like, "All right, I just got to play along until the time is right." Turns out, though, that Ball is going to flip the script at the last moment, keep everybody on their toes, and not be good to his word. Who would have thought a demon is going to go back on what he said he would do?
Well, see, you know, the first watch of this, I wasn't buying that any of this was real. I thought, who's are we in Ash's mind's eye? Are we seeing things from his perspective? Because I found it hard to believe to have they were with the Delta. They got the guns out in the trunk, the trunk being fully intact. Then later on, we see the necklace back on Pablo.
Yeah.
Which you learn it's more of a controlling, because so he was able to take it off and let the Necronomicon do its work. But he had put it back on, apparently, just to keep it at bay until time was right. But, at first I was confused.
So did you feel like it explained itself decently throughout the rest of the episode, or did you kind of have an aha moment when you watched it the second time?
I honestly still believe that it could still turn out to be, I felt like Lacey was kind of killed a little bit too quickly. I don't know, maybe if he's going to go back, and it looks like he's going back in the past, like based on the preview. I don't know if that's spoilery, if I should have said that, but. I think he's going to eventually bring back characters possibly that way.
I don't think it's spoilery because it's conjecture at this point. I believe he's going into the past. You believe it. The feedback that we have from listeners confirms that they believe it too. So it's a consensus, but we don't know.
Yeah, so I guess I'm rambling at this point, but I still think it's a possibility that this could still be taking place in his mind. It's not that interesting, though. It's not like I want it to be that.
Yeah. I have a theory that there's going to be some sort of time travel. I'll lay it out right now, just real quick. A theory that there's going to be a lot of time travel coming up. And while they won't necessarily touch on the events of Army of Darkness if and until they get the proper rights to do so, I believe that there's going to be, at the end of this, there's going to be a way to bring everybody who's dead back. And then everything kind of rights itself, and people can go on living their lives, and all of this guilt is lifted off of Ash's shoulders because he was never a bad person to begin with. And it's not fair that this has happened, and maybe that's tied up with what his dad was saying, and there's some sort of special power here. And then at the very, very end of the series, the book is going to appear somewhere to somebody, and it's going to, somebody's going to chant the demon incantations because they're a dumbass, and there it goes, and starts all over again. So it's almost like we have this wheel of time thing going on.
Well, with their predilection for foreshadowing, what if they already have the rights to Army of Darkness? I mean, because he looked, the way Ash is dressed in this episode reminds me of what he wears in Army of Darkness, especially the poster. Like, all you need to do is rip the sleeves off.
Yeah.
And then you've got some time traveling that's starting to happen. So maybe we're going to see, we've got two episodes left. Maybe we'll see him go. Going to end up in that same universe in 1300, whatever it was.
I would love it. I don't remember
the years.
Bring Spinach Chin back. If you guys need an actor to play that guy, you can put me in old makeup and a big long beard. I'll do it. Just saying. So what has Sheriff Emery gained out of this? Not a whole lot, because now, his daughter's not safe. His wife's not safe, and he's not safe, and she's blaming him for it, which she should. Why would you make a deal with the devil like that? But of course, as we learn later on, Emery's mind is pretty weak.
I thought we would get more out of Sheriff Emery as well. So that's why I'm not buying it. But I did have an epiphany that I wish I would have had earlier on, because when we recalled who he played in Spartacus, because he pissed on Bodiatus. That's the most memorable thing. But then he gets pissed on when he gets buried under the stadium. The whole piss thing is, again, here in this show, because it's about him pissing his pants, or the idea that he's pissed his pants a lot has been a theme. Anyway,
I wonder if it's like the production crew revisiting and the writers revisiting this, because I don't know if the writers are necessarily the same people. But it could just be coincidence, but it would be funny if they were trying to do a direct nod to that. Like, hey, we're bringing back the pee theme just for fun. So Pablo, Kelly, and Ruby split up, and Kelly and Pablo encounter Sheriff Emery, who claims that it was Ball who was controlling him all along. And, of course, Kelly keeps her gun pointed in his face the whole time. Just like, all right, keep your distance, motherfucker. I've had my run-ins with you, Stay back. So, he just talks about wanting to make everything right and get his family back together. Kind of reminded me of Tom Jane was on Arrested Development. I just want my kids back.
That's funny, because I was watching The Expanse earlier today, and he's in that.
So Lacey appears down the hall, and she quickly reveals herself to be a Deadite who proceeds to attack Pablo. Pablo fights back with a staple gun in a pretty interesting scene, just hammering her in the face with the thing. But it's fairly ineffectual, but it's a fun use of a staple gun nonetheless. Lacey kills a guard with his own walkie-talkie, and then she has brings back some of that good old deadite humor. Look, Dad, a unicorn. Magic is real. Now, here's another point where I want to step off and say, the girl who is in here, Amanda, and the guard, Reg, who is, if this is an abandoned asylum, why is there an inmate and a guard? I'm not getting that. So we've got another one of these logical gaps that we need to just kind of drive the fixed delta over and whistle past the graveyard, right? Just kind of like, okay, you know.
Well, I mean, and then why aren't they dead? Because if Ash killed them in the last episode.
Yeah.
Well, Reg is dead, but Amanda's not dead.
He didn't actually kill anybody in that. That was all Ball doing that stuff to his head.
But that's what's confusing about it. So some of it is real, some of it's not. So they're actually really in this asylum, but some of the events that take place are not real. So that's why it's like, I don't buy that any of it's real. Because you got them showing up in the Delta. Where the fuck they get the Delta?
Exactly. So I don't know. It's hard to say. So do you think that none of this happened?
I don't know. Maybe I'm hijacking this recap. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. We'll just keep going. Okay. So Kelly takes her shot at Lacey, abracadabra, but Emery pushes her arm out of the way, and deadite Lacey makes her escape. Good job, jackass. You know, I really don't know what I would do if you turned into a deadite and then you seemed to turn back into yourself, because going by the rules as they've been established, you know, you could do the whole thing, I'm all right, you listening to me? I said I was all right. And then I'd be like, okay, well, this is my wife. I want her to be okay. So I guess I understand it from that point of view. But once you see somebody like that, it's a little bit hard to go back to thinking of them in any kind of normal sense. So
it's like they're tainted forever.
Yeah. I mean, are you going to be okay at the dinner table or next to them in the bed at night? You know, just thinking, you know, they could be a deadeye right now and I don't know it.
Does it look like chicken pox and can manifest as shingles again later in adulthood? You know?
Oh. Emery searches for and finds Lacey. She plays nice until Kelly shows up, and then she snaps his neck and pulls off his head, blood splashing into the intro. And she says, the only thing that you were worse at being than a cop was being a father. Man, these deadites really know how to just, like, cut to the bone. That's got to be, like, a harsh thing to hear right before you die. And as much of a dickhead as Thomas Emery was in this show, nobody deserves to hear that right before they die.
Yeah, he obviously loved his daughter, too. So.
Yeah.
But he brought them there.
True.
Which is, when did all this take place?
This took place during last episode, I think. You know, while Ash is having all this stuff being rearranged in his mind and he's in an insane asylum and all that stuff, this is when Ball is reaching out to these people who he already has under his control nominally, at least some of them, and says, okay, well, if you want to help me out, I need Linda to come and talk to Ash, and then I can assure that you guys will be on the safe side of things when I'm ruling the world as an evil demon. So we come something that usually doesn't happen. We come back from the intro blood splash, and right away, we're continuing with the same scene as if it was unbroken. And she says, Lacey says, oh, look, he does have a backbone after all. And you could see his spinal cord hanging from his severed head. Really nice effects. Loved it. Throwing the head and attached spinal cord at Kelly, she yells, tag, you're it. One thing the show is always going to be known for when all is said and done at the end of the day is the perfect blending of the macabre and the humorous. Mm-hmm. They know how to keep it balanced, like to a perfection, to where it doesn't tip too far either way. So Kelly pursues Lacey through the asylum and gets wrapped up in a fire hose. Or I'm sorry, I guess this would be a water hose. And Kelly turns on the water and turns the tables, spraying her in the face. And then spraying her in the face. Ha ha. You see what I did there? So Kelly basically turns the tables on her, gets the water hose and sprays her right in the face and then shoots her in the face and does away with Deadite Kelly once and for all. So this is...
She blew her head to pieces. That's gross. I was eating. I had to put down my food.
We decided to do our first view of this episode while eating dinner, and we had pizza. It was really good pizza, and homemade, by the way. And Yeah, we kind of had to stop for a second at some parts because we were wavering between, do we watch it while we eat or wait till after we eat? And I said, well, as long as it's not the morgue scene again, we should be good. As long as there's no, you know, there's different body fluids in this episode, but, you know, pee is easier to take than poo. So Kelly gives a short eulogy for Lacey, who doesn't notice Ash, dressed pretty much like Jason Voorhees, sans the mask, behind her. I thought it was a nice touch, too, because she's like, look, you were a good kid. This wasn't your fault. Your dad was a dipshit, you know, but sorry you're here, but this is what happens in this world now. You know, you're living in the orbit of the Necronomicon, or you're dead in the orbit of the Necronomicon, as it were.
Yeah, like, and I know Pablo talks to her about being human later, and it was a great moment for them.
Linda searches for Lacey, slips in blood, and sees her husband's remains with her little cell phone flashlight. She's just like, oh my God, that's got to unnerve anybody. But, you know, I got to give it to Michelle Hurd and Linda B, the character. She is a trooper. And it's like she says later on, you know, people have been making that mistake all her life, not giving her enough credit for her strength. I think they're about to find out in the next couple of episodes. It would be great if she does not get killed. I would really like that.
Yeah, I wonder if she's going to be in next season now that she's going
to
start.
Were you about to say now that Pablo's not going to be there?
No, I just, she's going to be a ghost beater.
That'd be awesome. So Ash scratches his chainsaw on the wall like a madman. So he's playing the role really good here. He's fooling ball. He's Bill is getting the wool pulled over his eyes here at this point because he's doing everything to a T. He's act like Tappert said in the little extras after the episode that we dropped all the characters right into a classic 80s slasher film. And he actually likened Ash to
Mike Myers.
And I would say he's more like Jason because of the way he's dressed, but it's just me. It's just this, there's similarities between the two anyway. It's this hulking guy who's not saying too much, who's coming after you with lethal weapons and you don't know what to do to stop him. Pablo, meanwhile, is worried that the Brujo pendant is not going to be enough to last. He pulls down his shirt and he sees that it's kind of struggling to keep back all of the symbols that are now tattooed over his whole torso. And Ruby finds the corpse of Reg and says, we've got to get Ash before Ball scrambles his peanut brain, which was a close runner-up for my Metal Mike quote of the week.
Same here.
That was great. The first time I heard it, it was good that I've watched this episode about four times now, because the first time she said that, I laughed so hard, I think I missed the next minute or two of what was going on. His peanut.
It's her delivery, too.
Oh, yeah. She's nothing short of perfect. So Ruby lets Pablo know that even if everything goes great, there is a good chance Pablo will die. This is said as Reg hangs in the background with, you know, some sort of earthworm or other creepy bug crawling out of his mouth. And, you know, Pablo's like, look, this isn't cool. You know, he's like, you're immortal, or you're just new to this mortal thing, apparently. So you don't understand that when you talk about dying to people who are mortal and who have always been mortal, it sucks. We don't like to think of our own mortality because it does all sorts of nasty shit to our thought processes.
And the way they frame the shot, you see Reg hanging in the background, like death looming above Pablo.
Yeah, yeah, that's why I had mentioned it, because it's like this, they want you to keep it in mind. So it's more foreshadowing, like we were talking about before. I can't tell you that I saw that Pablo was going to die, but rewatching it, it becomes blatantly obvious that somebody's going to die, probably him. And so this is where one of the greater, the better parts of the episode comes up. And she's like, so you can kiss all your sweet ideas about what's going to happen goodbye. And then Pablo's like, well, I actually have this really good idea of a Honduran food truck and a computer repair shop. And I'm going to call it Pablito's Fish and Chips. You get it? Because the chips are like microchips. And she's like, no, that's awful. What else you got? So that, having said that, Pablito's Fish and Chips needs to appear on a t-shirt. If we have to make it ourselves, I guess we will. But
yeah, it just occurred to me because of the foreshadowing, because last episode, Ash is led to believe that he killed Pablo and Kelly / Reg and Amanda. Mm-hmm. But in this episode, Reg is dead, but Amanda is not. Pablo dies this episode. Kelly survives it. And because later on, when Kelly discovers Amanda, she sees, like, Amanda, like, I guess, walk past the door real quick.
Yeah.
And then she looks into it and you see her reflection coming back. So it's almost like you could imagine it being a mirror as well.
Hmm.
Like it's a, I thought that was an interesting touch.
So the counterparts live and the counterparts die in this.
Yeah, yeah. They were just playing with it, I think.
It's morbid.
I mean, the show's morbid, but it's just a subtle.
I wasn't saying that as a negative. I mean, it's morbid. This is what we're here to do.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm just saying it's just a cool way they were toying with some of the characters that were present.
I like that. I like the duality of that, showing that the, you know, because you had the, like you're saying, the alternate universe version of Kelly and Pablo and then the real world. And in both of those, the male dies and the female survives. I did not catch that until you brought it up.
I only just now thought of it.
It's pretty cool. I like it. We'll go with, actually, that was in my notes right here. I was about to talk about that, and then M steals my thunder. Thanks. So, Kelly, oh good, another pitch black hallway. And this is where she first encounters Amanda, who was in the room, I believe, that Kelly was inhabiting in the ball dream. A meth mouth junkie who lets Kelly know that Ash is looking for her, because she kind of tries to describe Ash as tall, dumb, and he smells like bread. I don't know where the fuck that comes from or what importance that has. It just sounds funny.
That's not a good thing, though.
No, I guess it's, yeah, smelling like bread.
I mean, I like the way bread smells, but I don't necessarily want you to smell like bread.
You know, it's funny because I got an oil change the other day, and the guy who was checking me out at the, you know, at the register, he was like, "Are you a baker?" I said, "No, I work in a kitchen, though." And he goes, "Oh, well, I had this guy who's been my customer for years and years, and his car smells the same as yours, and he was a baker at this local bakery." And I was like, well, I think some of the basic smells of all kitchens, regardless of what you're cooking, are the same, because it comes down to the
oil.
Equipment, oil, and the stuff that we use to clean with. Mm-hmm. And then the general production of food, it just has that kind of smell. But then, you know, it varies. You know, this... If you were to change the oil in my car in the middle of the summer, you might not think I was a baker. You'd be like, are you a deep sea diver?
Exactly. I was going to say, do you fish
for a living? Yeah, do you fish for a living? So, but anyway, so apparently Ash smells like he works in a kitchen. Maybe this is a hygiene issue. You know, maybe his whole trailer smells bad. Well, his streamline does smell bad, because Ruby and Kelly have commented on it before. So, you know, this is where she tells Amanda, she's like, she says, I'm not Kelly. And she's like, no, you're not Kelly. I'm Kelly. He's like, oh, he's after you.
But, you know, also Amanda said that Ash was in her head and she can't get him out. So what's up with that? What's Ball doing to her?
Ball has to throw these people together and give them reference points that make them aware and familiar of these people who have never met each other. So that's why Ash sees Amanda and Reg as Kelly and Pablo. And Amanda is seeing Ash as Ashy Slashy, somebody she knows perhaps from living in the area as this local legend. Mm-hmm. So he has to kind of make, you know, do this cross transference type thing. I'm really reaching here, but this is what I think is happening, to try to make them all aware of each other. And she's got a weak mind too, because she's already an addict. So it's stuck in her head now. She can't get Ash out no matter what she does. So Ruby explains to Pablo what Ball has been doing to Ash. A bit of exposition to get us all on the same page as far as the audience. Destroy the book, and that's what his goal is. And then Pablo's like, wait a minute, I am the book.
Cue Ash.
Yeah, cue Ash. Ash appears at the end of the hallway and revs up. Run away. On the floor is a stick figure with boobs, drawing of Linda holding her severed head. And this, of course, comes from the, you know, the movie where she's doing the dance as the skeleton and everything, and the head just kind of rolls off onto her left hand and stuff
and
like that.
And that's Evil Dead 2, right?
I believe so. Yeah, I believe that's Evil Dead 2, because it's showing you, you know, what happens and then what happened in the first one, I believe. Don't quote me on that. It's been a while since I've watched either one of them. And honestly, those two movies tend to run together for me. I can just watch them all as one piece of great filmmaking. So you were saying something earlier off podcast that you feel like this is getting us primed to see more stuff that has to do with the original movies coming up, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think, because like I said already, they have a predilection for foreshadowing and themes also. There's been a lot of pee. I mean, just in the show alone, because even last season, Kelly pissed on herself, and then you've got Thomas pissing, and
there's two references to piss in this episode alone.
Yeah. So, but anyways, that's beside the point what I'm making here. But we just saw a drawing of Linda. There's got to be a reason for that.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
Other than the fact that Ash has been in there drawing and he's terrible at it, but.
So we had Ellen Sanwees come back as Cheryl.
Right.
A couple episodes ago. Are we going to get the original Linda back?
We might.
Oh.
One of them.
That might be fun. That might be fun. That's what, if you saw the preview for the next episode and Ash is like, oh God. So maybe that's what he sees.
Linda B is like, I'm Linda. No, I'm Linda. They're going to have a Linda fight.
Ooh, that'd be cool. So Kelly enters Ash's asylum room. And this scene, aside from the last scene with everybody in the same room, this scene is probably my favorite, or second favorite, I'll say, because. So she says, she looks and she sees the Ashy Slashy puppet sitting on the bed. And she goes, okay, I've seen some seriously disturbing shit lately, but you are adorable.
He is at first.
When he's just kind of sitting there and he looks like an actual Muppet, he's not that bad. But then when you start playing the eerie music behind it, he takes on a very evil feeling real quick. She asks if he knows where Ash is. Right then, Amanda screams and runs down the hall. Kelly turns to leave to follow Amanda to see what's going on, but the door slams shut. The puppet starts to taunt Kelly, and this is when she's just like, oh, shit. You know, it's always a bad thing to be in a horror film when there's a puppet around. Bad things happen. You know, puppets, they're just murderous perverts. So Linda B continues to look for Lacey, but encounters Amanda, who is running stark mad down the hallway, exclaiming that Ashy Slashy has Kelly. Won't be long now. So Pablo and Ruby encounter Ash again, and they see a liquid falling to the floor, and referencing what Em was saying earlier, Pablo's like, is he peeing?
I actually said it before Pablo did when we were watching. I was like, is he peeing? And then Pablo's like, is he peeing? That was funny.
He's like, that's not pee. Ash ignites his gasoline and then lights it by the friction from, it looks like the friction from the saw blade. And then it lights up this kind of square of fire around him just so he can look more intimidating and menacing. And obviously it's an empty gesture because we know at this point that Ash is in full control of his faculties. And he's just playing the part to make sure that Ball, who is watching at all times, is convinced that he has everything under his control.
I know when I was first watching it, I was trying to figure out what the point of that was. It's like, do you not want them to go that way? Is that why you did that?
It could be, yeah. He wants to push them forward towards something else or trap them because he has to eventually get Pablo in the room and then.
Yeah, that makes sense. Duh.
So he ash ignites the gasoline and then slowly gives chase like the proverbial horror movie guy. So Kelly and Ashy Slashy volley back and forth with some good one-liners. So, you know, he appears on her hand, just like he did on Ash's, because that's his MO. And they start going back and forth. And then he says something, and she's like, whoa, what were you about to say, you little motherfuck? Sack up. Sack up is the theme of this episode, or this season, rather. Sack up, sunshine. And he says, girl, you're the one with your hand all up in my puppet pooper. Want me to return the favor? Which would have been a great candidate for Metal Mike quote of the week, but, you know, we had better ones to do. So Ashy Slashy bites Kelly first in the crotch.
Yeah, definitely a pervert.
Yeah, definitely a pervert puppet. Well, I mean, if you're
he went there first.
If you're a puppet and you're distilled from the mind of Ashley J. Williams, you're going to be a pervert, and that's where you're going to bite first. You know, but this is a good callback to the deadite intestine. Don't suck my Johnson from a couple of episodes ago. You know, they go for the crotch first, then they go for other places. So
it's Ashy Slashy J. Trump.
Bite her right in the pussy.
Grab her right in the pussy.
So he bites her first in the crotch, then in the neck, then grows teeth. One Ashy Slashy. Ha ha ha. Kelly and Slashy tussle, and Kelly gets her face pushed in piss.
Yes.
And Slashy gets punched repeatedly, very hard. So we had a little bit of foreshadowing because you saw this. What are those things called?
The bedpan?
Bedpan, thank you. The bedpan full of pee, which you could assume this was Ash's room. So that's Ash's piss while he was, you know, being in his ball mind trap.
Because he's been eating a lot of asparagus or something.
Ugh. But she gets her face dunked in it, and she has to actually blow bubbles through it. And then, like I said, after that, Kelly gets up and starts punching the crap out of this puppet. And so, he decides that, okay, funny time is over, after he makes a couple of jokes about fuzzy cuffs and safe words and things like that. And he says, well, we've learned a lot today, but now it's time for you to die. And she's like, oh, yeah, I've learned a lot. And my Metal Mike quote, always bring a gun to a puppet fight. And then she blows his fucking head off. So sweet.
That was a great scene. This Raimi and Tappert are always producing television shows that have kick-ass roles for women.
It doesn't even seem like it's intentional. It's just like there's good roles and it's going to be bing, bing, bing. You know, and some are male, some are female. And
that was a great action scene. And they didn't pull any punches. I know it's a funny turn of phrase to use for this, but you don't really see many action scenes where a woman's face is getting pushed into piss like that.
No, you do not.
You'll see men, but not women.
So yeah.
Not that I wanted to see Kelly's face pushing the piss, but at the same time, I appreciated the seeing her in a pretty high-stake fight like that.
It was much more fun to watch her pee than it was to see her, like, in season one, than to see her face get pushed in. But I actually totally
agree.
People
pay good money for that.
Yeah, that's another thing we miss. People pay good money for this kind of thing. So why are you so pissed? Definitely a perverted puppet. So at this same time, Ruby and Pablo are seeking refuge in a closet. So Kelly revisits her early season two conflict over her place in the group as she's walking around in the room, mm-hmm. kind of talking about, like, why are you taking orders? You should be the leader. But there's no deadite mirror to this. It's just a kind of internal dialogue that's going on in her head. And Linda B opens the door, which was locked. So even though she had, dusted off the puppet, she wasn't going to be able to get out unless Linda came in. And so Kelly, thinking that this might be Ball or some incarnation of him, just clocks her right across the jaw. So, but Linda B fights back. Gotta make sure you're not Ball. And she's like, and that works? She's like, yes. Yes.
Didn't it?
Kelly persuades Linda to help her find Ash and send Ball back. Then they will locate Lacey, who, Linda has already made perfectly clear that that's who she's trying to find and that's what she's trying to do.
But she can tell that.
She can. It doesn't
Kelly's
come up till later, but she can tell.
You could see a look on her face. I think she can tell.
Ash has Ruby and Pablo trapped in this closet, and Ruby starts to show her human side a little bit to Pablo. And, it's kind of ironic that she's becoming more human while he's getting closer to his apparent demise. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice little draw of tension there. And she says, kind of giving him a pep talk, and she's like, all those fish and chips customers are depending on you. It turns out that they are in there with a stiff, kind of like a Goonies scene, when Chunk is stuck with the
ice cream.
And he's like, they've got double chocolate eruption, rocky road. Oh my God, guys, there's a stiff. Paul really missed out on a good one here. But so Ash saws through the body of this stiff and he pokes his head in the little hole that's been made. And he says, having a heart to heart. So this is when Ruby starts talking about, like, Pablo wants to go out there and talk to him, and she's just like, no. She says, Pablo, you're my only hope.
Yeah.
So we have Star Wars reference number two. And Pablo is not giving up on Ash. They used to work at the Value Stop together. They used to watch Monday Night Raw together, remember? So he's trying to bring this up to kind of pull at Ash's heartstrings. Of course, he doesn't know that he doesn't need to, because it's the same Ash altogether. But this is a nice callback to the very first episode of season one, because Pablo was like, hey, I've got some, I think he had some turkey burgers or something like that, and he wanted to cook them on the grill and they could watch Monday Night Raw together. And Ash was like, no can do, Pablo. I'm getting out of town, because he had just unleashed the chaos of the Necronomicon. And, he wasn't really faithful to anybody at this point, at that point. So
as far as the Star Wars quotes go, okay, so Kelly is the Han Solo we've established because of attitude, not necessarily quotes.
Mm-hmm.
Pablo is Luke.
Sure.
And Ruby's Leia, who's Ash.
Ooh, Ben Kenobi?
That means he's going to die.
Hmm. Eventually, yeah. He's not getting any younger. So. I'm not getting any younger either. I should lay off the old people jokes. Hmm. That would be my guess, though. Do you have another candidate?
No, I mean, it's crossed my mind that Ash could die. But it's called Ash versus Evil Dead, so they're not going to kill Ash.
Yeah, I mean, when you have a character whose name is in the title, it's a little bit difficult to...
Yeah, so maybe this line of conversation is just going nowhere.
I mean, I would totally watch a show that was just Pablo and Kelly and maybe Ruby sometimes, you know, fighting the forces of the Necronomicon without Ash there. Some of my favorite scenes have been without Ash. Not that he's doing bad in this season, or not that they're writing him bad or anything like that. No negative connotations towards that at all, but...
He's Lando.
Lando Calrissian. All right, so Pablo leaves the closet and gets drug away by Ash. Now, of course, you know, Ruby is trying to aim her gun at him through that same gate that was locked in his, you know, fever dream with Ball last episode. And, you know, Pablo's like, don't shoot, you know, because he's not at all convinced that she could take out Ash and not him. And I don't think that he wants Ash to be taken out, because I think he feels like he's redeemable.
That right.
Even if he's
of course
under,
Pablo would think that.
Yeah, even if he's under Bill's control at this point, it's not always going to be that way. So Linda confronts Kelly about not telling her about Lacey. The two pump each other up with an awesome pep talk and go to confront Ball. I liked it, you know, because she says, look, everybody has been underestimating me my whole life, and that's their mistake. I'm actually a strong person. I can handle this shit. And so Kelly's like, all right, I was doing that, but now I'm not going to. I'm going to give it to you straight. You know, your daughter is dead. I'm not going to tell you that I shot her in the head and watched it explode, but she's dead. And, you know, you can either let this shit drag you down, or you can let it light a fire inside you and you can just go to, you know, new heights. I mean, Kelly should write lyrics for Hammerfall and Halloween. I mean, she'd just be awesome at it. So they find Pablo hanging like in his vision from a couple episodes ago. Remember? Mm-hmm. Because
I remember, because I had thought maybe it was foreshadowing something for Ruby, but it was for himself.
Yeah.
So I was wrong about that.
So it's just like inside of Ash's room that Ruby never got around to tidying up. Good for her. Pablo is hanging up, but this time he's hanging up Sans shirt, and we can see all of the tattoos on his torso and how buff he's become, you know? So
yeah, so it seems to be a pattern developing here that you get to the latter half of seasons and Pablo's in a very, like,
precarious,
unenviable predicament. Either he's birthing creepy babes out of his mouth, or he's hogtied and getting sliced in half.
Pablo is kind of like the whipping boy. It's almost like they sat down to do storyboards for these seasons and this whole series in general. And, you know, Campbell said, look, he went up to Tappert and Raimi. He said, look, I'll be your whipping boy 25% of the time, but you're going to need to find another 75%. And Ray Santiago said, I'll do it, you know.
See, and this is why they can't end it here like this for Pablo. He's got to have a season where he's
winning.
He's winning. Yeah, he's badass. He's doing the Kelly.
Yeah, I would like to see that.
Yeah.
I would totally like to see that. You know, like to see Pablo, you know, just hook up with a chick that's totally into him, that he's totally into her, and, you know, just have that going for him and just be, I don't know. I want to see good things happen for Pablo. I don't believe he's dead, but we'll see. We'll get to that here in a second. So, like I said, they find Pablo hanging like in his vision earlier. Ash plays bad for a few moments more, just making sure that everybody is in the room except for Ruby. And he says, oh, I'm doing just like I'm supposed to, aren't I, Dr. Peacock? And then Ball appears as Peacock, and he's like, yes, you are. Now go ahead and finish the deed, hoping that he's just going to run his chainsaw right up into Pablo's guts, kill the book, and then he can stay on Earth forever. All right? Not going to happen, bud. So Ash cuts down Pablo and helps him up, confounding Ball has just knocked out everybody in the room, basically, except for Ash, because they all try to kind of jump on him at the same time, not realizing he has, or maybe not caring, because they're being heroic and brave, that he has these super demon powers.
He disarms Kelly, at least with the big gun she had.
Yes, but she has that holdout, mm-hmm. just like Han Solo. Mm-hmm. She has a holdout, and hers is not a little mini blaster. It's a 9mm. Mm-hmm. And it is effective. So Ash cuts down Pablo and throws out his arm and to help him out, confounding Ball. And this is the point where I got out of my chair and I was just pumping my fist in the air, which I've done a few times in this season and in this series in general. But I was really psyched in this. I was like, hell yeah, because I called this as the rest of the No Shippers did. that he was not going to be under Ball's control. So it's not a big win like I was with, you know, Bjorn in the last season of Vikings. But, you know, it's a win. It's an I told you so. But
Bjorn.
So he says, sorry, Bill, you played right into my hand. I've said this before. I'll probably say it again. I don't know why it's so fucking funny to me when he calls him Bill. It just is.
And I like he said hand, singular, as well.
Yeah, he played right into my hand. I did not notice that. That is good. You played right into my hand because I only have one. So Ball tries to make a move, and Kelly fills Bill full of holes from her 9mm. Just bam, 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 like one right to the temple.
First one hits him right in the head. Yeah.
If this was a human being, first shot, killed.
Yeah.
Done. But, I mean, she keeps going. You know, she empties out most of that clip. And I like how she's nonchalant about it. She just goes, brr, and then Ash just kind of like looks away to make sure he doesn't get splattered in the face. He's like, yeah, it's Tuesday. This is what we do. So Ash reveals that his plan has worked, and this is his plan all along, the pet tracker. We do not know when he was able to shove it down Ball's throat, but apparently he attached it to his person at some point, and he's been playing Ball this whole time, just waiting to get him and the Necronomicon in the same room with everybody else. And he's like, whoopsie, my plan worked.
You can thank me later. One thing I forgot to mention as you were talking about when Ball knocked everybody down, he knocked Linda and she fell, you know, towards Ash. Ash took a moment to check out either, I don't know if he looked down her shirt or if he looked at her ass, but he was checking her out. If you look at his face, he looks down at her like, with an appraising look.
That is, you know,
that's very much an Ash thing to do.
From a humanistic perspective, that's a shitty thing to do. He should have cared about her welfare. But from an Ashley J. Williams perspective, it's totally what he would do.
Or he's pretending still at that point, but
yeah, it's possible that he's pretending and he's just like, get a little, you know,
an eyeful of that.
That side of males is very strong. So in somebody like Ash, it's probably turbocharged all the time. So anyway, Ash had a really good quote, which is another definite runner up for the Metal Mike quote of the week. We still got to, he says, don't thank me yet. We still got to send this hairy ball sack back to hell. Pablo pulls off the Brujo necklace and begins chanting in Sumerian, but Ball is having none of it. He pushes him back and easily handles everybody in the room. Just a 1, 2, 3. Even Ash tries to get him with the boomstick and nothing comes out. It's breathing dust and he's just crab apples, which is just, it's great for some reason. I don't know why. It's not a curse word. It's nothing dirty or nasty. It's just crab apples. Like, that's what you came up with when you're faced with a demon and you have a gun in his face and there's no bullets.
Yeah, it's like making light of a situation that's pretty fucking heavy.
So that is until Ruby slides into first base, scoops up the Brujo necklace, does a rope-a-dope on Ball, throws him to the ground, and then slaps it right on his chest, immobilizing him. The only thing that was missing from this was a Lucy Lawless channeling Xena.
Yeah, it was awesome. I loved that move. Again, Raimi and Tappert.
It gets better every time you watch it, too.
Kick-ass roles for women.
She just comes in and just, like, scoops it up in one hand. I mean, and it just shows you, it's like, she's been holding back for the last couple of episodes, but she's a badass. Ruby is a badass, so watch out. Just watch out. Pablo starts to chant the words to send Ball back, and they throw him on the gurney that Ash was strapped to when he was getting the electroshock therapy, and they all hold down a limb. And Pablo is holding the head, and then he starts to gouge his eyes out. And you notice all of the symbols that are on his body start to flow into those eyes. And Ball is just not having a good time. And he's able to throw everybody off of him into opposite, you know, ends of the room.
Yeah, it was like a concussive
force push or something. And then it's just him and Pablo. And this is when he starts to just go haywire and swinging his arms every which way. And then Pablo gets cut across the midsection with the very sharp thumbnail that Ball possesses.
Fingernail,
whichever. I guess it wasn't his thumb. His index finger, fingernail. And so then Ball explodes, and the crew congratulates Pablo, saying, nice slay, Pablo. And he's like, yeah, and I forgot exactly what it was, but Ash says something about He says it really fast, and it's funny, and I wish I wrote it down. It's a good quote, but it wouldn't have been nearly the Metal Mike quote of the week. Everybody is very congratulatory of Pablo for doing what he just did, and he just kind of stands there and smiles, and everybody else has gore on them, as does he. And then he slides into two pieces.
Well,
dead.
First he frowns, and then, yeah. Then.
Yeah, he frowns a little bit, and then he slides into two pieces on the floor. And then his intestines.
Brutal.
Yeah. I mean, one side of him is just intestines kind of slowly wiggling around. The other side of him is spurting out blood. And, you know, I really liked Kelly's reaction because, I mean, she has a quip for everything. She's ready for anything. She's the Han Solo of the group, like you pointed out. And I completely agree with that. And she just puts her hands over her mouth, even though they're mm-hmm. covered with ball juice. Mm-hmm. And she's just like, oh, my God, my friend just died. And I don't know. I don't believe myself personally that this is the end of Pablo, and I don't believe it's the end of Rey Santiago's involvement with the Evil Dead franchise, not for a second. Because we watch it on, we have the Kindle Fire, or no, I'm sorry, Kindle. We have the Fire Stick mm-hmm. on our TV. Amazon Fire Stick. And when we watch it, there's always a little segment that comes on directly after. And it shows you a preview for the next episode, and then it shows you a little behind the scenes, like, you know, a bit about how they did the special effects and mm-hmm. whatnot. And I feel like Tappert was being very cavalier about this, and he says, you know, this is where Pablo dies, and at the end of it, he says, we kill off major characters all the time, important characters all the time in the Evil Dead franchise.
That's not actually true, because I don't think those, you know, anybody who's been killed in the movies were actually major characters.
Yeah. I mean, who did they really kill?
You never really get to know them in the way that you do Pablo. So, I mean, how do you define major character at this point?
The only one that I could think of is in Evil Dead 2.
Sarah.
The other Nobi.
Yeah. Is it Sarah? Or the actress's name was Sarah.
Yeah. I should know this, like, but, you know, there's so much useless information mm-hmm. in my head that sometimes it gets pushed out in favor of other useless information. But, There's that person who survives, the Nobi daughter, or who would have survived, but she dies at the end of Evil Dead 2, Dead by Dawn. And then, but you know, all of the people who die in the original movie had to die, or there'd be no goddamn story. You know, there'd be nothing to talk about. So I'm not really sure where Tappert's going with this, but I feel like he was altogether too cavalier
right.
with his proclamation that, you know, people die and that Pablo's dead. So we come to the end of the episode, and Pablo is in two distinct pieces. He's like a Viking season 4. He's been bifurcated, and it's nobody's happy about this. And the little bit of a preview that we get of the next episode, episode 9, is it shows Ash throwing what looks like parts of a body wrapped in plastic, or wrapped in a, you know, a big hefty sack or something like that, into the trunk of the Delta. And then they're talking about, you know, death as a concept and things like that. So I don't know what to think. I feel like there's time travel coming up. There's a visit to the cabin. The book is back. So having said all that, I hold out a lot of faith that Pablo is not dead, that Pablo is going to be coming back, and that, you know, we do know at this point that the show has been renewed for a season 3. So with that in mind, I think that we can kind of speculate that Rey Santiago didn't do all that work in the gym just to have a couple of scenes with his shirt off. He's going to be back.
That's the only reason why he would want to work out, right?
You don't work out like that because you want to be healthy. You just eat better. You work out like that because you're doing it for a TV show, or you want to impress the opposite sex. That's just how humans work.
Or you're a dancer.
Is Pablo a dancer?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's possibly
remember
it.
Remember he went to the school that the Fame school was based on?
I want to live forever.
I want to learn how to fly.
Interesting.
All right, we're moving on to feedback.
All right, let's do some feedback.
And before we get into feedback, we'd like to ask every one of you, if you haven't yet, please go to our website at www.noship.net, click on our support page, and go write us a review. We actually have a link there where you can go directly to iTunes, and it makes it easy. And even if you don't want to write, you can click on some stars.
Yeah, I would just like to say that we've been asking for these reviews for a little bit, and we've gotten some results from that. We've had some people write some reviews that have been very complimentary to us. All of our reviewers get a 10 out of 10 on the Little Lori Doll rating scale. Thank you for taking time out of your day to review us. Write some reviews, guys. They're awesome. They make our day. It makes us keep wanting to do this stuff. And
also, those of you who were interested in Amazon Fire Stick, because you heard Steve and I talking about how we listen or watch Ash vs. Evil Dead that way, if you decide to go get one, go to our website at www.noship.net and click on our Amazon link before you do so. It's also a great Christmas gift. All right, feedback. First up, Polearm. He says, I just finished watching 208 on the Stars app. Man, what an episode. We can't say they didn't warn us or foreshadow Pablo's death enough, but man, at least he went out epically. I'll get this out of the way at the start. This was definitely the greatest episode so far. I've spoken about the balance of the show with elements that have been in the series since the second movie and to varying degrees in each episode of the show. Those were slapstick comedy, splatter gore, and horror/suspense actual fear. But there's one element that was mostly absent this year, as we mostly dealt with characters hardened to death of people, and that is emotion. Emotion in the horror and suspense when we and the characters actually care about a death scene is what separates this episode from so many others in the series. These deaths haven't been there since the last three and first two episodes of season one and the second Evil Dead movie. This episode had the missing fourth element, and man, that makes all the difference in how much more effective and horrifying and gut-wrenching everything else is. Final piece first, Pablo. Rest in peace, man. You went out like a champ, fulfilling your destiny as the book, dying and going out as a badass demon lord destroying wizard. And can anyone, even Ash, ask for anything better and expect to get it in this show? The only problem I have with his death was how, though I'm sad that it happened at all. Cut in half? Listen, Ball's finger claw is long, and I figured maybe he sliced Pablo's intestines open and Pablo was in shock and they would start leaking out and Pablo would die over a few minutes. But at what point did Ball's claw look long enough to cut him in half? So my vote for his death scene was messy, gut-leaking death and not being sliced in half. I felt like everyone got a lot of focus, even secondary characters like the sheriff, Lacey, and Linda. I still felt bad at how used and overwhelmed the sheriff was. I mean, yes, he was a bit of a putz, but for most of the really bad stuff, he was under the control of Ball. So he basically brought his wife and daughter to the evil demon lord for safety? Had to be the mind control. No one is that stupid. I would have liked to know if Lacey was dead or not. With Pablo pulling the magic mojo, if she was still alive, he might have actually been able to depossess her, unlike all the others killed over the years. I love Linda's strength moment, but is it weird I still don't like her look with that blonde hair? I think our deadite death of this week has to be Ball going back to hell. Love the puppet fight. Trailer for next week. Everyone heading out of town, upset at Pablo's death, and it seems like a portal gets opened and they actually travel in time. So time travel is a thing again, and from the preview where they speed past 80 and almost hit a drunk, it seems like they even sort of recreate the scene from Back to the Future in the process. Best of all, what from dialogue I think is the time and place they travel to? Not before Pablo's death or Amanda's, but before everyone in the modern century in the woods at the cabin right after Professor Nobi first opened the Necronomicon. Or Ash, but I hope it's Professor Nobi. It's come back to the cabin again in both space and time, back to where it all began. I can't wait for next week's episode. 10 out of 10.
So you bring up some good points. Thanks for writing, by the way.
Yes, thank you.
You bring up some really good points. If they do, it did look to me like the way they were speeding the Delta down the road going towards the homeless guy, and then the bright light flashes, it looks like they're going to pull some sort of Back to the Future-esque thing, which would be really awesome. But they obviously are at the cabin. We see the cellar, amazingly bloodless. I don't know who was in there scrubbing everything down, but there's a lot of carnage around that cellar.
And the book is back.
Yeah, and the book is back. So the book and Pablo are no longer the same entity. So if that means the book can be reconstituted as a thing, that means Pablo can also be reconstituted as a thing separate from the book, correct?
But they're going to the past to get the book?
Possibly, yeah. Who knows? I mean, it's up in the air. If it is, I would like to see the professor. I would like to see Professor Nobi, because we never got to see Professor Nobi, really. As he was as a real living, breathing human being. You just get to hear his voice. Mm-hmm. And I think you might have, there might be something a little bit in a season, or I mean in Evil Dead 2, where you see them like going through some artifacts or something like that. But if it is, it's very brief. But I would like to see who they choose as Professor Nobi, or you know, and if they were to go to that point, like how much of everything could be undone, like we were talking about earlier in the episode in the recap, how much of everything could be put to right and not have all of this death and carnage. Who knows?
What was his name? Lou Majors?
Lee Majors?
What if it's Lee Majors playing Nobi?
Oh my God.
What if that was his secret?
Oh, his secret was, I didn't really die. I'm just the one who found the goddamn book. And then I recited the demon passages from it. And because you're my kid, you're the one who gets to save the world. It'd just be like, Dad?
I mean, there's got to be something that is revealed by the end of this season.
Hopefully.
There should be.
I would be okay with that. I would be okay with that kind of twist. But that would also mean that Brock Williams was leading a double life as a wood chipper guy or whatever he did, wood salesman or lumberjack in a small town in Michigan. And he was also a archaeologist. And so then that would also draw a line of relationship between him and Ruby.
Well, Ruby was pretending to be a Nobi, right?
As far as we can, I mean, yeah, I guess. I guess that's what we have to guess because her it's never made clear to us, has it? So
they don't bother with that.
Yeah, they don't bother with that. How is the Delta fixed?
Exactly.
So, you know, we just kind of skip over it and keep going, which is part of the beauty and attraction of this show because you don't have to have everything spoon-fed to you. There is parts and portions of exposition that let you know where we are to get you on the same page, like Ruby actually did with Pablo at some point in this episode, but they don't fill in all the blanks.
All right, next up, Metal Mike.
Uh-oh.
What's up, No Shippers? I am still a little confused on what was real and what was not real from the last episode, but you got to hand it to Bill. He really goes all in on a plan dressing up like the Doctor. I guess if you're a shape-shifting SOB, there is more incentive to do so, but he did say Ash was more of a challenge compared to Sheriff Backbone. I love the return of Deadite humor. I know we got some with Cheryl 2 episodes ago, but this season doesn't have as much so far. It's not a bad thing, but the line, "Look, Daddy, a unicorn, magic is real," made me feel like I was watching season 1 where we got a little more of that humor. I always love hearing characters describe other characters to random people, so when Kelly described Ash as smelling like bread, it gave me a good laugh. I think it all stems from an episode of Seinfeld where George describes Elaine as having a big wall of hair and a face like a frying pan. It's always something weird.
That's great.
The Kelly and Ash Muppet fight scene was gold. Physical humor and a face full of piss. Didn't Ash get a face full of piss last season? I can't wait to see who gets it in season 3. They are setting up Linda for something big. The music playing while she gave her speech to Kelly makes me think she is going to go badass on some fucking deadites in the last 2 episodes. Considering her feelings for Ash, it probably means she is dying by the end of the season, but I hope she makes it to season 3. Was the dead person in the closet with Pablo and Ruby the homeless man? I couldn't tell. If not, I still don't know if it was significant that he was in Ash's delusion. Maybe he just lives there and happens to be in that room at the time when the patients were freaking out. Any thoughts if it wasn't him that was dead? I would have to see the homeless man again. I don't know. I'm not really quite certain that it was him in the closet with Pablo and Ruby. But I do think he's the guy that's in the trailer.
I don't think it was the man in the closet who was the homeless man who comes up and says that Ash ruined his life. I think he's in the trailer and he's the one who's in the headlights of the Delta as it's traveling very fast. And Polearm is hypothesizing that that's the beginning of their Back to the Future trip.
So we should also learn how Ash ruined his life at some point.
Hopefully, yeah.
So Metal Mike goes on to say, "The only thing I will say about the ending is fuck that." My Metal Mike quote of the week goes to Ashy Slashy with, "You're the one with your hand all up in my puppet, pooper." Take care, Metal Mike from New Hampshire. Dig it.
Thanks, Metal Mike. Deadite humor. Deadite humor is something that didn't appear until Dead by Dawn, and then it's been with us ever since in one form or another through the franchise. And yeah, it came back. It was notably missing in this season up until Cheryl, really. There was a little bit of it in the first episode, but they chilled out on the humor so they could get in the Ashy Slashy bit, you know, Ashy Slashy, heaven and hell, so on and so forth, so he could know that Ruby was in Elk Grove and that's where the book was and they had to go back, et cetera, et cetera. So it's nice to see it make a return because Amber had a little bit of it too, you know, and she's talking about, I hate dirty old men and this and that. So it's sprinkled about, and I think it's an ingredient that they use to bake the Evil Dead pie, as it were, but they use it sparingly. So when it comes back up, it's always nice to see because, you know, in drawing that balance between the horror and the gore and the darkness and the funniness, they have to be careful because if you, you know, it's a potent ingredient. So if you use too much of it. Yeah, as far as Linda is concerned, I think they do have some, I think they are going to unleash her on the Deadites if she, in fact, is with the crew when they go back to the cabin in the next episode. So, you know, we have another trend here that's playing itself out that seems to be each episode ends with a penultimate episode in the cabin, and then we go on to something else and, you know, kind of have a setup with like all roads lead to the cabin. And then after that, after we deal with the cabin, you have the setup episode for what's going to happen in the third season.
So is Kelly going to reprise her face off with the cabin again? And this time win?
That would be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I think the cabin deserves some, the cabin needs some well-deserved comeuppance.
Yes.
I'll say that. The cabin has been getting the better out of a lot of people for a long, long time. And I think it's time that the cabin gets a smackdown.
And she's good and pissed now.
Yeah.
Pablo's dead.
So if you figure Pablo's dead and Kelly's pissed, her whole family's dead, so Linda B is pissed. And Ash has just had enough of every fucking thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those three marching into that place is going to, they could do some damage.
Thanks, Metal Mike. All right, up next, Undefeated Sam. He says, wow, just wow, wow, wow. I don't even know what to say. I didn't see that coming, and I don't know how to process it. That was the homie, and part of the reason why I love this show was the dynamic twixt Ash, Kelly, and Pablo, the strong vagina. I knew Tullius had to bite it, and I figured the wife and or daughter would, but not the homie Pablo. I love the Kelly versus demonic Ash puppet battle. Tullius's decap was gory and great. Now excuse me while I go cry. Now excuse me while I go kiss the sky.
Well, first of all, Sam, I would just like to say that your use of the word twixt just pleases me to no end.
It's special.
It's a word. it's special. You reach out and touch my heart. It's special.
Pumpkin Escobar.
Yeah. I don't know what the fuck you just said, little kid. But you reached
He's
out.
Special.
Touch your brother's heart. He's special. It's not a word that gets used a lot in our language in common everyday usage. And I like hearing it put into a letter to us. I think that makes us special. So thank you for using that term. Yeah, Pablo. I don't believe he's dead. But if he is, fuck, damn, god damn it, shit, balls, Bill.
That's bills, balls.
Yeah, saggy bills, balls. It's just, I don't know. I'm going to be very sad if that is the case.
I don't believe it.
I'm going to be shocked if it's the case, but I'm going to be a very sad podcaster if that's the case. But I will not give up on this show. It won't make me like the show any less. In fact, it will probably heighten my enjoyment of it a certain extent. Not, like I would say, if you could push up my enjoyment of Ash versus Evil Dead by killing Pablo, it would go like 1 or 2 points. But if you brought Pablo back, it would be 3 or 4 points. So it's one of those situations.
If he's not resurrected by the time this season ends, on our bonus podcast, we'll have a moment where we'll drink one for Pablo.
We can have a remembrance of Pablo.
Yes.
What we can do is go back and find the good quotes out of season 2 that we didn't use because, like Em has pointed out, Pablo doesn't really get a whole lot of love on the Metal Mike quote of the week because we usually go with Ash, Kelly, and Ruby in that order.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are the ones that the writers have given all of these really good lines to. And Pablo doesn't get a whole lot of love on that. So we're going to have to go back and we're going to have to figure out and just have
that'd be a good way to do it. I like that.
But I don't think that's going to happen. We have 2 episodes left and I think Pablo's going to come back. Especially if there's time travel, all bets are off.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we could go anywhere. So
we could have a baby Pablo.
Hopefully
he has the same hair.
A baby Pablo with the same hair. So, well, thanks for the letter. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Undefeated Sam. Thanks, Metal Mike. Thanks, Polearm. So, we'll see what happens. I you know, if he comes back, it's probably not going to be next episode. It'll probably be the episode after. I could be wrong. I can see them trying to play it like that.
I would like to see them do a resurrection scene where they chant lines from the Necronomicon, like Kanda, you know, and everything, but it's done to the Duel of Fates from the, you know, from episode one, Phantom Menace. It's like Kanda, Pablo, do.
Which is appropriate since Darth Maul was sliced in half.
Yes. I did not think of that. That's a bonus. So
Pablo got Darth Mauled.
I'm surprised we didn't think of that earlier, thought of it.
That's the third Star Wars reference.
Yeah, there's a third Star Wars reference. But, I mean, that would make, I guess, you know, we were saying that Ash would be Obi-Wan, but, I mean, it would have to be, Bill that would be Obi-Wan case.
If Pablo continues on as Luke, then he's going to have, like, a metal lower body. He'll have, like, a C-3PO lower body, and then instead of the hand. Or maybe he'll have a C-3PO upper body, but his lower half will be human. I don't know. It's stupid. Let's move on. Speaking of music, though, the end credits reminded me of Spartacus music.
Yeah, it did have a similar feel. And it was funny because we were actually watching a Spartacus episode earlier today while we were cleaning up around the house. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, everybody, for writing in. Keep the reviews coming. We're really enjoying them. And this has been a No Ship Network podcast. I'm your host, Steve.
I am your host, Em.
And until next time, keep your filthy puppet buttholes off my hand.
Keep your filthy puppet buttholes off my hand.
See, it makes a nice little pop ditty.
Keep your filthy puppet. It's hard to do. I can't do it.
Keep your filthy puppet buttholes off my hand. Dun, 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 dun. Good night.
Good night.